As if all the publicity and all of the promotion hasn't been enough, obviously people know that tonight, Chase Auditorium will be hosting the Technori Startup Showcase in Wearable Works. The featured company of this evening is going to be Rivmeo, a wearable company that is doing some amazing things here in Chicago. I have its CEO and founder, Adam Tilton, here in studio with me to share us a little bit more about the journey of his personal experience as an entrepreneur in Chicago and where Rivmeo and wearables are going to be going. I'm Scott Catoon, and this is Technori Live. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So are you excited about tonight? You're going to be giving a nice little keynote, a nice sort of presentation and present to the world of what Rivmeo is and what you're working on?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm especially excited to talk about the future of wearables. So I'm going to position my talk a little bit in the beginning about where we see the market going, and that's a lot of fun to talk about.
I think so, too. And, you know, the funny thing is, so we did a wearables, Technori did wearables a few, I want to say 6 months ago or so, is when Seth Kravitz was hosting it. And, you know, I feel like it's such a hot topic that's been like around for a while, and people have been sort of waiting, when is wearables going to be the big thing? You know, there's the Apple Watch and stuff, and it's obviously, you know, obviously is a big thing, but I feel like it has come up short every couple of years. There's like a new big thing, and then it just sort of goes up and then just kind of sinks and doesn't really go anywhere. And I was sitting at Soho with some of your guys, Gregory and Jimmy, mm-hmm. and they showed a demo of what you guys are working on, and I literally was like, I was completely blown away.
Cool,
He probably looked very strange, but I'm sure you've seen Greg do this many times. So he rolls up his sleeves. He's got the English Laundry shirt on, naturally, because that's, you know, his style.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got the whole stuff out here. And he's showing me, like, this is me picking up a water glass. This is me, you know, doing a curl. Literally, the thing could tell after, I think it was two or three reps, and it started counting how many times he'd actually done a curl versus how many times he'd done other things. And it blew me away that truly it really comes down to just mathematics, essentially being a mathematics company.
Yeah, that's right. So at Rivmeo, we developed this software that makes wearable devices quite a bit more precise and accurate at both detecting and analyzing motion.
I would say usable. It makes them usable.
Yeah, really cool. So utilitarian is what we like to say. You know, it actually delivers a very particular piece of value to the consumer in the right moment. And that really is just a math problem. In fact, the technology came out of my PhD work at the University of Illinois. So I co-founded the company with Prashant, who was my PhD advisor, and we were not actually working on wearables. We were working on a variety of other types of problems around signal processing. So I was a control and estimations engineer. And we developed a solution that does pattern recognition and classification plus precise analysis. And that was not a result necessarily of looking at wearables, but the technology we developed was immediately applicable to that market. And so then we started to really focus on these wearable applications. And now we've built out a software solution that, you know, whether it's activity tracking in the gym, so we built Rivmeo Edge, which is for athletes who are lifting weights. We've also recently put out an application called Cadence Counter, and this was developed in collaboration with the United States Olympic Committee for some wheelchair racers, athletes that will be competing in the Paralympics down in Rio. So our software, at least the way that we see our value to the wearable market, is on making the analysis of the data more precise. But also in the wearable market, I think what's cool, you mentioned kind of the first generation and some of the missed expectations, maybe. Those devices primarily have been around pedometer functionality, so tracking of step counts, and they've primarily been worn on the wrist. And I think that we'll see wearables really move away from that, from smartwatch form factors to a lot of other exciting types of products.
I think so, too. I mean, I think my main attraction to wanting to have wearables as a theme this month was that I really do now, and honestly, a good part of my viewpoint in this is having met Greg and Jimmy and talked about what you guys were doing, spurred my brain to start thinking of all of these different applications. You sort of alluded to a few of them just now. But just the idea of, when you think of IoT, the idea of being able to have a connected warehouse, the ability to have connected workforces that are connected with the machines that tell you the precise times and things, and people can actually determine, you know, efficiency levels of people working, efficiency levels of the product getting out to the user. There's so many areas where I feel like wearables finally is in a point where we have the technology to use the math, to use the sort of brains that you guys have to create really an endless future and where this could go. That's at least my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we like to say is that you can't manage what you don't measure. And it's true that as you look around, whenever we're trying to optimize the performance of an action, I mean, it could be you know, I like to go to Formula One. That's, you know, I'm a big fan of F1 cars. The amount of telemetry that comes off of these race
cars—that's the biggest word ever used on our show, by the way.
All right, do I get a plaque for that?
Well, we'll get you a T-shirt tonight. I can promise you.
Oh, perfect. Okay. All right. So by telemetry, I mean, you know, the amount of sensing information that is used to monitor these cars, from, you know, pressures and weight to temperatures. I mean, anything they can know about the vehicle. And the reason why they do that is that's how they optimize the performance of the car as it goes around the track, is by having all this data, you can make smarter decisions. And I think that when I think about wearables, when I put my engineering brain on, right, if I'm looking at it from a problem-solution kind of viewpoint, I see wearable devices as beginning to provide the types of data and information that we want on the human body, so human telemetry, so that we can make better decisions. And that philosophy will be applicable whether it's around sports and performance, which is where we are today, to efficiency in the marketplace.
Healthcare. I mean, there's just so many areas. I totally agree with you. I think that we are in a sort of Peter Wilkins from Hyde Park Angels was here last week, and he talked about sort of the quantified human.
Yeah, sure.
I believe from a mental standpoint in the quantified human and the ability to sort of make your own personal changes and calculate the things that you do and see in order to be a better whatever, better husband, better friend, better, you know, whatever. I think that will then also apply to behavior. And this is a wearable. Oh, I mean, I guess it isn't a wearable, but it sort of what originally got my brain around this stuff is Arcos, the golf. I don't know if you're a golfer at all, but Arcos.
A terrible golfer, yeah.
Okay, well, Arcos, I was before Arcos. So you put these little gadgets in the back of your golf clubs, and essentially it got rid of the old style, which was you had to click it and swing, and it could tell you sort of like, you know, use GPS to be able to monitor where you're going and how far and the ball and so on and so forth. So they had all the courses mapped on it. Well, what Arcos did essentially is give you all the statistics around, I promise this is going somewhere, all the statistics around where the ball, you know, where off the tee you go, how often, you know, you make a bogey as a result of driving off the fairway, how often you made a birdie by hitting a shot long in the green versus short of the green, yada, yada, yada. The main point is what I ended up learning from it was my own, it had nothing to do with my swing, which is what its intention is. What I learned from it was my own mental mistakes. Mm-hmm. I learned that repeatedly when I would go on trains of bogeys in a row, repeatedly it was because I was going a club short and I would end up short. And where that kind of brought me into this whole world of wearables is, again, the quantified human. I look at that and go, not only did it help me physically know, you know, whether I'm swing plane is right and all this other stuff, but it actually was able to tell me that my decision making had a result. And never in my life before did I have a chance to actually read that result.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, other than score, you know, report cards, which were not so good.
Yeah, well, there you go, right? More data, better decisions, right? Yep. That's exactly right. It illuminated something to you that you might not have noticed. And I think with wearables, we're going to see a lot of that, where we are allowed to discover things about ourselves that we otherwise would not have been able to discover
100%.
Simply because we weren't taking the data on it. But I don't want to make it sound like wearables are only going to be these devices that measure us and take the fun out of things.
Sure.
We're also seeing a lot of connected products that are about, you know, creating some really interesting virtual reality experiences. Wilson Sporting Goods and their connected football is primarily around not making you necessarily a better player, but just around giving you an interaction with the ball that you couldn't have today, like being able to play a red zone game in your backyard where the mobile application is attached to the football and it can tell whether the ball was caught or the ball was dropped, when the ball was snapped, so it can take play times. I mean, a lot of interesting, you know, beyond just how do you make yourself a better golfer or make yourself a better athlete in the gym, but also what can you now do to enable people to connect with one another or to connect with a digital system by giving them devices on their body that can measure themselves?
And that doesn't even begin to get into the stuff that it does for, like, blind children who want to play ball. Wilson also has a lot of the softballs and baseballs and basketballs that are designed to be able to essentially connect the game for blind kids and for hearing impaired and for, you know, tons of other stuff. So there's a million places that this is going to go and can go, and I think you guys are leading the way. It's particularly cool that you're in Chicago leading the way. If I could ask you, when you went to U of I to pursue your PhD, what was the plan? What was the future as you saw it? Then obviously you said you weren't focused on wearables. Where were you going?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know that I had a plan. I think part of getting a
Me
PhD.
Too.
Yes. You know, right?
Master's degrees after master's degree. Professional student was my plan.
Yeah, I mean, I liked hanging out with smart people and working on hard problems, and so that's what I was doing. I mean, I worked on things like missile guidance and satellite tracking. In fact, we had a we worked on a project with Boeing Phantom Works out of St. Louis where we did some target state estimation for them. And with Mitsubishi Electric, we did a couple of orbital navigation problems. And I worked on things like SLAM, which is for autonomous vehicles. I mean, these are...
I was proud to tell people that I worked for, like, Kraft Recipes. What the hell? I got gypped. I paid, like, $87,000 a year to go to Northwestern, and I got to work at Kraft in some stupid media game. What the...
It sounds cooler than... I mean, these are just, you know, hard math problems that need to be solved, right?
I could not solve any of them or be of any assistance to you, but...
You know, I'm not even sure that I could solve any now anyway, so... but that's what I was doing, and I didn't really have a... I mean, there wasn't a 10-year plan. There was, like, a six-month plan. You know, pass your classes, get good grades, go on to the next semester. That was about as far ahead as I was thinking. But what happened is we developed some technology. We thought it had commercial potential in this market, and then we went through this program to validate whether or not it did. And it was in that program that we discovered wearable devices. This was this NSF iCore thing, which I could talk about for days, so I'll just say it was NSF iCore. We found wearables as a problem set, and then what we did is we just took the technology we had developed over 4 years and we went and we applied it. And it had this great outcome where we were almost immediately able to demonstrate far superior tracking than what was currently available on the market. And then I started to think about the startup, and that was in 2014.
Yeah. So I'll give you – so obviously you're going to talk a lot more about this this evening, but kind of for those who don't understand the – if you can give kind of a top down of what makes Rythmio able to do this.
Sure, yeah. So the core problem is in the area of machine learning. And what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to accurately detect when an interesting motion is taking place and not falsely detect as if something's taking place when that's not the case. So to give you a really simple example, take walking. You want to be able to identify when an individual is walking, but then not give them credit for steps if they're sitting on a boat in Lake Michigan, for example. And the way that you do that is by applying machine learning algorithms that can learn what's interesting and what's not. And that was the breakthrough that we had, is in the way that we apply mathematics to do machine learning. And because of our the uniqueness of our approach, we can go beyond identification, and we can do things like apply advanced metrics. So I can not only tell you you're walking, but I can tell you the speed or how far you're walking, you know, what the range of motion of your step is, whether you're walking efficiently. And because I can apply real metrics now, I can very precisely analyze how you're doing an action. I can do that over time. And that allows me to do things like tell you how you're walking today is different than it was 6 weeks ago. And over enough time, I can build up a body of data to be able to do predictions and recommendations.
Yep.
So the core competitive advantage, if you want to call it that, is our ability to solve this machine learning problem. But the uniqueness in our approach now enables us to go far beyond just detection of an activity to really precise analysis.
So if I understand this correctly, then I used the example before with Greg in the lifting of coffee versus a weightlifting routine.
Sure, yeah.
Is that you can essentially detect an aberration in the algorithm or an aberration in the movement or whatever, however the data is presenting itself, and notice, or the algorithm will notice that this is what we know to be common of a curl versus what we know to be common of a person sipping coffee.
Yeah, that's right. So every action is gonna. So you're wearing a device on, let's say, your left wrist. That device is sensing the way that you move. So if you do something like a bicep curl versus take a drink of water, it's going to generate a different set of information from the sensors. Our algorithm is able to detect that difference with a very precise level of accuracy, and then we're able to figure out what it is. Right. So the algorithm learns that this motion is called bicep curl, and then it can identify it down the road.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So obviously you stumble upon this point that this is like a whole other application and a whole other route. There is a massive difference between having a great idea and going and getting a job at a company or suggesting to some friends that we should do this and actually starting your own company and getting off the ground and building it to where now you've got employees and you've got an office and all this other stuff. That had to be scary for you, particularly since if you were like me, it was scary as can be for me. So when I left the comfort of Northwestern, we were just sitting there and basically it's like, you know, the loans are coming in, the money's being paid, I've got my drinks, I got my food, I'm good, you know, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
How did you decide, okay, we're going to make this a real thing, I'm going to incorporate this into a company and I'm going to start building it?
Yeah. So I never did actually make that decision.
Nice.
It was a process.
You lucked out.
Well, yeah.
You do have an incorporated company.
I
right?
do. I did start a company, yes, okay. And I do have employees. What happened? So I won the COSED competition, which is the University of Illinois' new business plan competition.
Yep. And
that
start.
It was, yeah, great start. That led me to meet a lot of the venture capitalists and angel investors here in the Midwest. So I decided that I was going to leave the university and go and pursue this startup idea. But I don't know that I sat down and thought about it. Like, I woke up one day and I started down this path. And it wasn't until later that summer when I had, like, so that summer I moved to Chicago, which was a decision I made in about 48 hours.
Where are you from originally?
Peoria.
Peoria.
Yeah,
okay.
So I grew up in Peoria, Illinois. So I haven't made it out of Illinois yet. That's on my to-do list or my bucket list. So I moved to Chicago, and I started building this company. I distinctly remember waking up one day and thinking, like, holy crap, I've raised some money. I had, like, 6 employees at that point. I've started this business. Like, how did this happen? I really didn't sit down and say, okay, I'm going to start a business and, like, think about it. It was just that, like, I developed this technology. I applied it to this problem. I won this competition. We had this great idea to go and start this business, Rythmio. We started working on it. Things started happening. And then at some point, I turned around and I looked back and I was like, wow, that was like a lot of change in a very small amount of time. Yeah. And I don't think that I ever contemplated it carefully. I mean, I'm super happy with my decision. I love what we did. And
yeah.
I think that's maybe why I didn't need to sit down and think about it.
But I honestly think I don't think schools would want to say this, but I think this is the best way. I mean, honestly, when I started my company out of Northwestern, I did every single thing you're supposed to do to start a company. I filed my LLC and my articles and everything. And I found my, you know, so-called friends, and I put them on a team and I said, we're going to do this and we're going to have our own, you know, deal. And everything was so planned, business plan and everything. I recommend doing the business plan. That you should do. But everything else, literally, it was fine. We did all right, but it just sort of broke apart, and it just was like so much focus on the wrong stuff, right? You fell out of love with what you're doing really quickly because it became a job immediately. It essentially turned a good idea into a job.
Yeah.
Which is bad.
So I think the one thing that has to be true if you're going to do this is you have to be in love with whatever it is that you're going to work on, the problem that you're solving or the value that you're delivering. And if that's true, all of this other stuff falls in place because
I think you're looking at it going, I'm just trying to solve this problem. And I don't even have a name because, you know what, I'm not selling anything. I'm just trying to solve a problem. And you just keep working on it. It's like, well, I need 3 hands to help solve this problem. I find someone who can maybe support it, or they don't need the money right now. However it is, we work together, and it's like, well, ultimately, what is this going to be called? Start coming up with branding, and then at a certain point, all right, we should probably incorporate and do all this, you know, whatever stuff. It just sort of finds itself.
Yeah, it does. Now, that being said, I mean, the next startup that I do, I'm going to be much better at. Right?
Well, yeah, but that's a different, totally different page because you've seen it. I think this is really particularly for the first timer, I feel like, is probably better to do a...
Yeah, my point there, I mean, what I was... is that there's a right way. There's definitely like a better way to do it, you know?
I don't know. I think there's a better suggested way.
Well, they say success is binary, right? Either you change the world or you don't.
Yeah.
Right? Everything else is just a base hit.
I kind of agree with that, to be honest with you. I mean, so maybe this is I'll tell you what, it's a success so far. This is the best way for you.
Yeah.
This was the best way for you.
It's been a blast. Yeah.
So what would be some of the things since moving to Chicago and having started this up and doing all this, what would be the one thing that you would advise other startup guys other than how to start the business? What would be something you would say to, whether it's wearables or anything, with regard to solving problems and staying on point?
Wow, that's a good question. I think that when you start a business and you're in love with this idea, you see the world a certain way. I think entrepreneurs, when they start a business, they can look forward to the future and they see what the world is going to look like when their startup exists in it. That is the most important thing to remain focused on, right? You cannot lose the vision of what you're trying to do. And regardless of, you know, the advice that you give or anything else, don't ever sort of veer away from that. Stay, you know, particularly focused on the world as you see it in a couple of years from now, and just work every day on solving that problem. And if you do that and you're able to keep that sharp focus, then everything else will sort of make itself known to you as you figure it out.
I think that's great advice. I also think that pretty much sums up how you started the company in the first place. But
yeah, indeed it does.
Sort of falls.
Yeah.
If it's meant to be, things are going to fall in place. If you're doing the right things, you're not going to get, like, it's going to work. Like, just, I think it's going to work if you just make sure you're working hard and you're doing the right things.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
Where do people go other than Technori tonight to find out more about Rythmio?
You can visit our website, rythmio.com. There's tons of great information there. Of course, we'll be tweeting from the event, so you can follow us on Twitter. And my office is here in Chicago, so people can look me up. I'm always happy to chat.
Very cool. At some point, that's going to change. You're not going to want to have people emailing you and pinging you and dropping by your office. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time.
It's been great. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course, we'll see you tonight. You can stay up to date by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or follow me at Katoon. You can stream these episodes live at wgnbusiness.com or iTunes. Boom. That's a wrap.